Pop Spotting 173.
Wednesday, November 30th, 2011.
Welcome to Pop Spotting. I'm Jen.
And I'm Ryan.
It's Wildcard Wednesday, and we were inspired to hit the books again after catching one of our favorite authors live here in Honolulu last week.
That's right. David Sedaris came to Honolulu as part of the last leg of his latest book tour. He hit 40 cities in 45 days, but he took the stage at the Blaisdell Concert Hall before getting a brief week off here in Paradise. Now, Jen, I'm a huge fan of David Sedaris. Of course, I'm an NPR nerd, so that's not a surprise, but you've actually read almost all of his books. You've heard him on the radio as well. What did you think of seeing him live in person?
I don't know. For me, there was a huge disconnect between his appearance and his voice. It was strange. I was expecting a much deeper voice out of that person. Even though I'd heard him on the radio, I still was expecting something completely different. And his show was really different from what I was expecting in that he didn't tell a whole lot of stories like he does on NPR and in his books. He amasses a very large collection of dirty jokes, and he shared some of those with us.
Yeah, there was a lot of dirty jokes. There was a lot of blue material, some serious scatological humor. And at
poop
first,
jokes.
It's such, yeah, poop jokes, and even worse. I mean, there's some stories there that I wasn't expecting surrounded by the NPR, you know, slightly older, stuffy crowd. Of course, they did enjoy it, but kind of hearing their uncomfortable laughs was also part of the experience. So that was a bit of a surprise. And yeah, he did read a couple of stories, I think, that were in his books or would be in his books, but he does use these book tours as a chance to trial his material and see how it goes over before it maybe turns up in a future collection of stories. But because he's a traveling author, there was a lot of travel diary entries. And so, like you said, he goes to these book signings and people try to give him the best dirty joke and he writes them down in his diary, and he shared some of those. There's a lot of stories about how awful it is to travel by air. He did have a few political jokes. He talked about the healthcare system in the U.S. and the debate over that versus, you know, socialized medicine in France where he lives. He does a little bit of bumper sticker psychology. I liked how he started a story about a frail old lady at the supermarket and how sweet he thought she was until he saw the bumper sticker for some conservative cause and then referred to her as the bitter old hag. And what I think is interesting is that these are some generic topics, and I'm a little worried that, you know, as he does a lot of stories about his life, as his life becomes that of a famous author, it gets a little meta in terms of the stories that he tells. But it's still his distinct take on these things, these generic topics. Like, he did a number of commentary about growing up and how much easier kids have it. You know, it's almost the I walked uphill both ways in the snow without shoes, but in that kind of whiny but smart but self-depreciating way that only David Sedaris does.
I think he's evolving in kind of into a grumpy old man. You look at his material where he talks more about his childhood early on, and then he's gradually gotten into stories about life in France and learning how to speak French and his partner Hugh. At the reading, he did talk about his first day here in Honolulu. He reached his rental home and he went out to get something at the store, and he came back and his computer had been taken.
Yeah, he'd been burgled.
He'd been burglarized, and he talked about the police coming and how he was handling it, and I felt horrible for him. I know this was not his first trip to Hawaii, and I know this kind of thing is never fun, and it never makes for a fun trip.
Well, the thing is, though, he's a writer, and so we're all, I think, in the audience going, uh-oh, next collection of stories, the time I got robbed, the time I got my house got burgled while I was in Hawaii. He lost his computer with all of his notes. He lost some other valuables there. But, of course, you know, he joked about it throughout the show. And he also, during the show, for whatever reason, a small gecko, well, he called it a lizard repeatedly, and everyone was yelling back at him, gecko, a little lizard had leapt from the lights down onto his shoulder and then into his goblet of water. And he only noticed it halfway through, and he goes, there's a lizard in my water. And and then pulled the lizard out and talked about it, sort of gasping for breath on the podium. And again, sort of his way of weaving that actual experience, unscripted experience, into his show was a lot of fun. And I'm sure we're probably going to see, he just did a book about animals, unfortunately, but I can see an upcoming story about suicidal geckos, I think, coming from from David Sedaris. Well, as I mentioned, if you're into NPR, you know, you probably are aware of him, but I think a lot of people outside of that audience know him too. But for those completely unfamiliar with David Sedaris, how about a quick primer here?
He became well known when National Public Radio broadcast his essay Santaland Diaries in 1992, and then he became a regular contributor to This American Life with Ira Glass.
Yeah, I mean, that's a show that you should listen to, a great podcast, but yeah, that was where he got his start. It was the story of working at a large department store as an elf in Santaland.
I'm Smith Schmeisies.
And the fun thing about it is that that short story is now like played every year as part of the routine, and there's even a stage play based on that story that a lot of high school and other drama groups do. So that's a great story. It was a great start, but he's done a lot since then.
He's written 6 books, and he's contributed to and edited an anthology. Most of his books are collections of autobiographical stories. His latest book, Squirrel Seeks Chipmunk, it's kind of a collection of animal fables, and his books are mostly about his childhood. He grew up in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hmm. He was the grandson of a Greek immigrant. So he talks a lot about his upbringing with his immigrant grandmother and with his 4 sisters and 1 brother, and he describes his parents as extremely neurotic, and his childhood and the childhood of his siblings it was very chaotic, and he cites Flannery O'Connor often as an influence, and I can really sense that now that I know, because he really kind of takes the Southern Gothic thing and applies it to his own life, and occasionally his material's a little bit uncomfortable to read because it's very, very candid.
Well, I wouldn't go as far as to say you grew up in the South. Do you say that?
Yes.
But okay, so you grew up in the South. This is not exactly the same South. Raleigh is very different from where you grew up in Florida,
right.
But is that part of why it's uncomfortable, that it rings true, almost too true, because of your upbringing?
No, he talks about things that people don't usually talk about. And that's, to me, what would make him a really good drinking buddy, is I don't think anything could shock him, because even in his books, he talks about just a lot of things that could be potentially embarrassing.
Right, well, there's absolutely no taboos. We mentioned the blue material, the scatological humor, jokes about Monica Lewinsky and Lorena Bobbitt, and going to donate bodily fluids, and, you know, so I can see that. I also remember there was briefly a debate, or people were saying that they shouldn't necessarily put his books in the nonfiction category because they're almost too ridiculous, and he did admit that, of course, for comedic effect, he might embellish things. But I, too, sensed a real authenticity. I could imagine this household growing up. There's certainly thankfulness that I didn't grow up in that particular household. Now, of course, in his show, he makes reference to his life as an author, and I think some of his stories are a little meta in the same way. In these books, he talks about how his family reacts to being depicted in his stories and suddenly becoming famous or infamous because of the embarrassing stories that he tells. And certainly he does reflect on the life that he's had since he's become well-known and successful as an author and traveling the world. I mean, that was a big part of this stage performance, but I have recollection that he covers some of those things in his books as well, these meta stories.
There are a few of those, and mostly his family kind of shrinks from the limelight, I'm guessing, because of the stories that he tells. But his sister Amy is an actress,
right.
She's been on a few talk shows, and she's written a couple of books, and she's really channeled his stories and observations into something really different. And I've enjoyed watching his progression as an author from somebody who told a lot of stories about his childhood to things that are happening right now. He's moved to France with his partner Hugh. He's learning the language. He's learning the customs in France, and he's really dealing with a lot of older people things like his aging father.
Right. So let's go over some of his books. His first book was Barrel Fever. Did you read that one?
No.
But that's the one that included the Santaland Diaries. It's where he got his start in 1994. But I think it was Naked in 1997 where you picked up his bibliography.
I think that was his breakout book, and I'd read it a long time ago, and I'd forgotten about it until we were at the performance last week, and somebody in the audience asked him if he'd been back to a nudist colony, and then it prompted me to thumb through Naked today, and I realized how funny a book it is. I think it's probably the most laugh-out-loud funny book of his, and by turns, it's also the saddest book. The story Ashes talks about his sister's wedding, and during the time that his sister's getting married, his mother also has terminal cancer, so he's dealing with both things at the same time.
Now, that was in 1997. It was in this book that he had the short story Drama Bug, and that was also featured on This American Life. That's where I heard it, and it's a great depiction of the magical moment and the way you fall in love with being on stage, being a performer. Actually, I think it was about how he saw a mime for the first time, and he thought it was the greatest thing, and then he brought it home. He did the act for his mom, and she was horrified by the thought of him being a mime. He does a lot of things that horrifies his family. The next book was Holidays on Ice, 1997, but that was just more a collection of stuff, right?
Right. It was a collection of previously published stories and things that he'd read on NPR. In 2000, he published Me Talk Pretty One Day, and there were a lot of great stories in this book also. He talks about his gigs as a creative writing teacher and also as a personal assistant. And the title of the book comes from the story of the same name, which recalls his struggles to learn French. And a lot of the stories deal with his partner, Hugh, and their move to France and his observations about the culture. But my favorite story in the book is You Can't Kill the Rooster. It's about his brother, Paul.
And, you know, I think those family stories are always the ones that resonate. I do like this book. I think this is the first one that I had picked up. And I have to admit, of all of his readings, all of his stories, all of his short stories, I think my favorite one of all time is in this book, and that's called Jesus Shaves. You can even look it up on YouTube. It's all over the place. It's a great story because, like you said, he's trying to learn French, and he's in this class with people from all different cultures and all different languages trying to learn French, and the teacher gets this bright idea to use Christmas as the hook and say, okay, let's all figure out what the story of Christmas is, but tell that story in French. And as you can imagine, everything from the crucifixion to every other aspect of the Bible story is mangled horribly. I mean, it's a completely blasphemous story, and maybe that's why I like it so much.
Faced with the challenge of explaining the cornerstone of Christianity, we did what any self-respecting group of people might do. We talked about food instead. Easter is a party for to eat of the lamb, an Italian student explained. One, too, may eat of the chocolate. And who brings the chocolate, the teacher asked. I knew the word, and so I raised my hand, saying, the rabbit of Easter. He bring of the chocolate. My classmates reacted as though I had pinned the delivery on a house cat. They were mortified. A rabbit? A rabbit? The teacher, assuming I'd used the wrong word, positioned her index fingers on top of her head, wiggling them as though they were ears. You mean one of these? A rabbit, rabbit? Well, sure, I said. He come in the night when one sleep on a bed. With a hand he have the basket, like for a bread. The Moroccan rolled her eyes, and the teacher sadly shook her head, as if this explained everything that was wrong with my country. No, no, she said. Here in France, the chocolate is brought by a big bell that flies in from Rome.
But yeah, that's a good book, probably one of his bestsellers, and I think a pretty good place to start if you're new to David Sedaris. What came after that book, though?
Dress Your Family in Corduroy and Denim came out in 2004, and this book is more about his childhood. There are lots of neurotic parents' stories, and there's a chapter about his sister, Tiffany. Tiffany is a little bit messed up in a very endearing way, and she's also very smart. So the story is about how she's the black sheep of the family and how she drives their dad crazy, but how he loves her all the same.
Well, I like that book because some people feel they're the David Sedaris in their lives, and some people, I think, honestly feel like they're the Tiffany in their family. So it works both ways there. And then it was in 2008 where I think his most recent, his latest book of short stories came out, and that was When You Are Engulfed in flames.
It was inspired by a 3-month-long trip to Japan undertaken in an effort to stop smoking. The title comes from a book that he found in his hotel room in Japan, and it really focuses on his time in Japan and travel and kind of things that he was going through at the time.
Yeah, not so much about his family in that one. And and after that book, he came out with the story, the book of animal fables, The Squirrel Seeks Chipmunk. Did you pick up that book yet?
No, I haven't yet.
Well, I've read excerpts of it, and again, that turned up on This American Life, and it is another hilarious collection of stories, but, you know, it's not autobiographical, but I do like that all of the animals are just sort of named Squirrel and Chipmunk. I mean, they don't have names. There's not Phil or Louise. It's just these stories about these animals interacting with each other. It's pretty good. I'm definitely planning on looking that one up. But of the books that I've read, like I said, I think Me Talk Pretty One Day is a great place to start, but I'm getting the sense you have a different recommendation for beginners of David Sedaris?
I would say to start with Naked, specifically the story Naked, and you can pick and choose your stories. You can start with Naked and then go to Ashes and then go to the rest of the book.
Well, I like a lot of his books because I think all of these books are less than 300 pages, like maybe 250 pages long.
Right.
They're short stories. I don't want to say that I know this for a fact, but I heard they make really good bathroom readers. So, although, you know, laughing and yeah, never mind. Let's not go there. Well, let's talk instead a little bit about his sister, Amy Sedaris. As you mentioned, she's pretty well known, got a career of her own. She was a former member of the improv group Second City. She's a Daily Show correspondent. She's done several appearances on Letterman. Most folks might know her as the character Jerry Blank in the Comedy Central series Strangers with Candy. And she co-created that series along with Stephen Colbert and Paul Dinello. She's been in various TV shows like School of Rock and Sex and the City, Monk and The Closer. But like her brother, David, Amy is now also an author. She's written a couple of pretty cool books.
I picked up her first book, On a Lark, because I saw it in the bookstore and it looked interesting. It's called I Like You, Hospitality Under the Influence. And it was her first solo effort. And it looked intriguing because it seemed like it was a parody of those lifestyle books, you know, Martha Stewart and that kind of thing. But there were recipes in it. And I'm always a sucker for recipe books. So I brought it home and I read it. And I found the recipes really interesting because you could tell she was drawing on experience, like her childhood and her Greek background, and incorporating that into a lot of jokes. You know, there are tips on invitations and hosting and cooking and pantyhose even, and it's written in a very unique and funny and clever way, and I enjoy her style. There are illustrations and photos. It was on the New York Times bestseller list for 12 weeks. It does tell stories of her life, but in a slightly different way than David does.
Yeah, it's a different take. It is set up, I remember people describing it as white trash Martha Stewart. You know, it's Southern, it's immigrant, but it's also poor, and like you said, there's pantyhose, random references to squirrels. Just the design of the book is a lot of fun. It looks like a family scrapbook with photos and, you know, a really creative layout and illustrations, for sure. Very helpful illustrations showing you those creative things that you can use pantyhose for. I do like the tone. I do like the mock way that it's trying to help you throw a party, for example, not straight up autobiography or anecdotes like David Sedaris does. And some of this stuff is great. Like how to keep the elderly awake at your parties, mm-hmm. You know, because once they fall asleep, it's all over. Or how not to introduce people, like here's Phil, he has cancer, and just little one-off random things that just catch you by surprise, make you laugh. But I also, like you said, there's some real recipes in here that actually work, some real tips, like, you know, how to cook or how to remove stains. So it is useful and it is funny at the same time.
There's a list of tips about dealing with drunk people, which that, is always useful.
Yeah, you might actually need that skill. But that wasn't her only book. She kind of had a sequel, I guess, sort of a follow-up to I Like You, Hospitality Under the Influence.
This year she published Simple Times Crafts for Poor People. It's kind of a craft guide, but it's the kind of crafts that you did in kindergarten, kind with pipe cleaners and popsicle sticks. And there's a chapter about dealing with adhesives and cleaning up. She gets a little bit weird. There are photo spreads of her in costumes. It's a continuation to I Like You, kind of a sequel, but it's more of a joke and not a real guide.
But there are recipes in this book as well.
There are some really interesting looking recipes, yes.
Well, I did like this one. I mean, I just opened it randomly and there's like, you know, how to make tinfoil balls. Okay, yeah. You know, that's a really great craft that you want to make there. So yeah, you know, Amy Sedaris doing quite well as an author, a book just out this year, drawing from sort of the same upbringing and background that David Sedaris did, but with a different take. A lot of fun. You can get her. She does her readings for her audiobooks. She does it with Paul Dinello. She also reads on the audiobooks of David's books with stories that involve her. And of course, all of David's books are available on audiobook all over, you know, This American Life, NPR websites, and certainly on YouTube if you want to check it out. But we do wholeheartedly recommend the classic experience of reading books by these two authors, David and Amy Sedaris. Now, if you have a love or not love of the Sedaris family, if you have your own recommendations for short stories, quirky families, autobiographical collections, we'd like to hear them. We are avid readers here on Pop Spotting, and we love the fact that you are as well. Pop Spotting wouldn't exist without you. You, right there, right now, listening at this moment, if you've not turned off our podcast already, you're definitely somebody that we want to hear from. Your feedback, your topic suggestions are what keep us going.
We want it to be easy peasy for you to be heard here on Pop Spotting. The best way is leaving a voicemail at 815-310-0808. You can email us at feedback@popspotting.net, or you can leave a comment on our blog at popspotting.net.
Easy peasy. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/popspotting. And on Twitter at twitter.com/popspotting.
If you're having trouble keeping up with our show, and sometimes I know we are, you can get an email every time we post a new show. Just subscribe to our notification list at popspotting.net/subscribe.
It's not a spam list. There are no special offers for you. It's just the blog posts as they go up. You can get in your inbox and keep track of them if you ever have to catch up with our show. We want to say thanks to Dan Pashman of the Sporkful podcast for making our theme song. And of course, we want to say a big mahalo to you for listening.
For Pop Spotting, I'm Jen.
And I'm Ryan.
Annyeong.
Annyeong. Korean?
Yeah.
I like it.